Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I'm like short, but not short enough to be this short. My name is Amy Stepanovich. If you've been at Dragon Con and on this track the last 4 years, you'll know me from my work at Access Now. But a month ago, I actually started a new job. I'm now the executive director at Silicon Flatirons, which is the tech policy shop at Colorado Law School. And I'm here with you today in that capacity, which means for the first time, I actually had to jump time zones to get to Dragon Con, which is a new experience. We are going to talk this morning about Facebook and democracy, and you would have had to have your head in the ground to not hear about one of the many controversies around Facebook over the last few years. I jotted a few down, many of them about privacy and the collection of data, speech, what is promoted speech, what is censored, access to the platform, who can or cannot use it, anonymity, the fact that you have to use your real name on the platform, manipulation and micro-targeting in advertising, and relationships between Facebook and third-party apps and different things that use Facebook. But through all these controversies, society hasn't really changed much. And I know like a lot of people think society's changed a lot over the last few years, and I'd agree with you. But over time, we still have news, we still have discussions, we still have satire, we still have false information, we still have public discussion. These things have been around since people learned to communicate. They're still around today, they're just in a slightly different form. So what has changed? And I want to introduce two broad topics that this panel will probably dig into a little bit. One, how has Facebook and social media changed the world, or if they have? I listed a few things. I think they've changed the ease of access to information, amplification, reach, and compartmentalization. The fact that you can now push things into different categories and purposefully not expose yourself to certain things. The other main category is how do you solve for these issues? I don't know if we're going to come to a solution in the next hour. Many people much smarter than I have been trying to come to a solution to these issues for, you know, a decade and haven't reached it, but let's talk about that. Is there more regulation that's needed? Broader shifts in digital literacy? Societal changes? What do we really need to, like, focus and dig in on to see progress here? I'm going to turn to my fellow panelists and let them introduce themselves, and then we're going to go back across the table and do some opening statements from each of them. So why don't we start, Dwayne, with you for introductions.
Okay, thanks, Amy. My name is Dwayne Gatesel, and I'm a lawyer from Austin, Texas. I deal with intellectual property matters, so copyrights, trademarks, domain names, litigation, licensing, that sort of thing. And so let me just say, as a lawyer, all of my comments, anything that I say today is going to be prefaced with the word alleged, because I don't want to get sued by Facebook for trade slander or anything like that. So that's it for me.
So I'm Tyra Burton. I'm a professor at Kennesaw State University. My kind of field of play is Facebook and social media, so that's what I specialize in as a marketer. So it's kind of a strange place for me to be talking about, because I'm kind of sometimes the bad guy when it comes to social media. So we'll have that side of the fence.
Hi, I'm Keith Watson. I've been at Georgia Tech for over 30 years. I'm the head of information security for the College of Computing. I'm a certified, GIAC certified security incident handler. I'm a Navy submarine qualified electronics technician doing special operations, cryptography, and signals intelligence, sponsor of Gray Hat Information Security Club at Georgia Tech and the Mad Hatters Capture the Flag team. I host the local DEF CON chapter, DC44, and I'm a member of the Atlanta 2600 chapter. Also a member of EFGA, if you're not familiar with that, that's Electronic Frontiers Georgia. I'm a co-developer of the Network King of the Hill Capture the Flag system, and we host two monthly Capture the Flags at DC44 and 2600. I've been following the use of social media bots in particular, because they spam all over my Swiki pages for psychological and disinformation warfare. And they've been run by U.S. citizens, U.S. political campaigns, and foreign nation state actors. So this should be a really, really fun thing. They tread all over the First Amendment, so they're actually making us decide whether we really mean to have everybody, are these inalienable rights that everybody has free speech, or just some have free speech? That's the battle that we're facing right now.
So the room behind us is making me realize that we have not told enough jokes and gotten you guys laughing enough. This topic doesn't really lend itself to a lot of jokes, but I'm going to ask you all, I'm going to count to three. And to wake everybody up, we're all going to cheer and laugh and be really loud for like 5 seconds. All right? Ready? One, two, you all have to participate. Three.
Make the other room jealous.
You all are the best.
Who's next door? Is that
I have no idea, but they're really happy.
Take that space track.
All right, so why don't we keep...
Or no, that's science track.
Is that science? Why don't we start with you for opening statements, and we'll go back this way.
Okay. There's a huge debate over fake news. There's a big debate over fake news. In some cases, it's misinformation or disinformation. There's a difference between them. You can have misinformation, which is you cite facts, but you don't give any corroborating evidence, or the evidence that you give is wrong. It's not the correct backup for that fact. It is a fact, but you don't provide supporting evidence. The other is you actually provide false information and potentially back it up with some kind of evidence that in itself is false. The question is, what's your target? What are you trying to do? You can be just trying to sow chaos. You can be trying to actually get people to do something that you have a specific thing in mind, or you could be trying to stop people from doing something you have in mind. You'd be amazed how many times it's just so chaos. How'd they say that in Batman? There's some people who just want to see the world burn. So just to give you an idea, this is a brief timeline of events. In 2004, Rene D'Arista... Oh, no, I'm not projecting, sorry. By the way, if anybody wants any of these references, I can make them available to you. I had so many links, I had trouble paring it down to just this. Rene D'Arista gets a degree in computer science, political science from Honors College at Sunny Stony Brook, and writes her paper on her thesis on 2004 Russian elections using behavioral advertising. This guy, Eric Gartz, I think it is, writes a very interesting paper in 2013 on the myth of cyber warfare. Everybody's expecting a cyber Pearl Harbor, and he says, no, that's not going to happen, because in actuality, if you do a cyber attack that produces in its effect the same thing as dropping an actual weapon, like you take out a power plant, you can expect the same kind of response as you would get if you dropped a bomb on a power plant, meaning you'll get a kinetic response. That's bombs, boots, and bullets. So the only people who can actually wage that kind of warfare are the people who can back it up and defend against a kinetic response. So that's not what we should expect. What he doesn't say is, well, then what should we expect? Well, we've actually, unfortunately, witnessed it. That's the problem. In 2014, Russia deployed a social media weapon. We weren't sure what they were doing at the time. It was later detected in an article written about it. It's called the Russian Internet Research Agency. They put out fake news about an accident of a chemical spill in Louisiana, in Centerville, Louisiana, including a YouTube video. They also produced a fake news of an Ebola breakout that coincided with all the Ebola stuff the doctors at Emory were doing, including a fake video on YouTube. And they also coinciding with the Michael Brown incident in Ferguson, they showed a fake video of a woman being shot by Atlanta police, an unarmed woman being shot by Atlanta police. In 2015, Rene D'Arista, remember her from before, she starts tracking social media posts because she's helping a bill, trying to get a bill passed in the California State Assembly, SB 277, to make sure that people vaccinate their kids to go to school. And she notices this massive surge of negative sentiment about this bill online. So she does an investigation and realizes it's a very small number of people using many, many accounts to make it look like a huge population of people. And they're deliberately targeting ads and targeting content to rile up people and create as much chaos over this bill as possible to hopefully not get it passed. It did pass, by the way, and she ended up writing a Wired article called "Anti-Vaxxers Are Using Twitter to Manipulate a Vaccine Bill," not necessarily Facebook in this case. She was tasked by in 2015 by the Obama administration because they noticed that the Russians were using social media to attack voting. And so they contacted her as an expert in this area because of her article and her work to head up an investigation into that. In New York Times, they published an article in 2015, the agency, which is about those events that the Internet Research Agency did back in 2014. That was the article that I noticed, and I said, wait, what? I hadn't noticed this up until then. I was battling bots, but I didn't know that this was going on. So I read this, and I was instantly intrigued, given my background.
What was your background?
Well, I was on submarines. I did special operations, crypto, and signals intelligence, and that's all I can tell you. Now, in 2016, Cambridge Analytica built a weapons platform. They use this weapons, social media weapons platform, deliberately to be used to target audiences with whatever message you want, as long as you would pay them. So they actually did three major events. One was the 2016 Ted Cruz presidential candidate campaign, then the Trump presidential election, and then Brexit. There was a movie later to come out just recently called The Great Hack. If you've seen it on Netflix, I highly recommend you watch it. It's scary. In 2017, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence issued a paper, and it was about social media as a weapon. In 2017, a series of congressional hearings, Rene D'Arresta and some other people published the tactics and tropes of the Internet Research Agency as part of a congressional hearing. In 2018, March 2018, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence Russian report on Russia, active measures, social media as a weapon. Then Harry Farrell and Bruce Schneier published Common Knowledge Attacks on Democracy in October 2018. Georgia Tech Cybersecurity Summit breakout session, this was in October 2018, I was in attendance, and there were people who were involved in the Rene D'Arresta research project that was tasked by the Obama administration, talking about the research they'd done. And at that time, by that time, I'd done enough analysis on my own. So when somebody in the audience raised their hand and said, yeah, but why did they do that back in 2014? And I raised my hand and said, because it was a weapons test. They wanted to actually fire a weapon to make sure it worked, cause an effect that they could monitor from afar that wouldn't actually produce a response either diplomatically or kinetically or a cyber response. And that was my take on it. So I said that, and the researcher said, yeah, that's the same conclusion we came to. So that means they're testing this weapon. The only thing was, no consensus on why they were building the weapon. We had no idea what they wanted to use it for. So they got this cool weapon, but what are they going to do with it? Well, we unfortunately found out later. In 2018, NATO's Strategic Communications Center publishes a report, The Black Market for Social Media. Yeah. And then Bruce Schneier again publishes another essay, Defending Democratic Mechanisms and Institutions Against Information Attacks, which is to what you were talking about defending. And in 2019, General Nakasone, Commander of the United States Cyber Command, says, I assess we are seeing what we term corrosive threats in which malicious cyber actors weaponize personal information, steal intellectual property, and mount influence campaigns. Such measures have and will have strategic effects on our nation and allies. By the way, if you think the Russians are the only ones doing this, think again. We do it, and we do it to ourselves. The Mueller Report, yeah, social media is a weapon. New York Times article, 2019. FBI warns Russians' interference in 2020 race and boosts counterintelligence and operations. Social media as a weapon. CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. The war on pineapple, understanding foreign interference in five steps. Yes, it's a flyer to teach you about how to recognize social media interference. Netflix issues The Great Hack July of this year. If you haven't seen that, it's about the Cambridge Analytica incident. And then there was a Lawfare article, is the threat of fake science real? Well, it turns out the Russians have been up to this a long time because in 1980 they did a project, Operation Infection, where they tried to sow scientific papers demonstrating that Fort Detrick was the cause of the AIDS virus. Yeah, so they've been at this a long time. Now the last one was, and this is the one that came in yesterday, September 2019 issue of Scientific American. How many of you notice it's not September? Right. That's because they published their September issue in October. Misinformation has created a new world disorder. Our willingness to share content without thinking is exploited to spread disinformation. Now, that's really, really overwhelming. What do you do in light of that? What system could we possibly put in place that could protect you from this when anybody's allowed to say whatever they want? Well, that's the question. What are we going to do about this? Well, unfortunately for now, the only person who can help you with this problem is the one looking back at you in the mirror in the morning. You're going to have to train yourself to not be deceived by this. For now, that's all we have that I know of. Next.
Why don't we go
Tyler? Yeah, sure. Oh, sure. Okay. So from my point of view, looking at this from a marketer, I go back to 2008 and President Obama's campaign, because he showed the effects of digital media on being able to raise a grassroots campaign, where you move from getting donors that were donating thousands, ten thousands of dollars to people donating $5 and $10. We see that now, particularly with Mayor Pete's campaign for the presidency. And because of that seed sown in 2008, when the 2012 election happened, we again see now the Republicans coming in and saying, oh, there's this thing called digital marketing and perhaps we should do it. And by 2016, you can't look at digital media anymore and not see a ton of political ads and people talking about it. So we have that going on one hand, in my opinion. I'm a gamer girl at heart. That's what I love. I played World of Warcraft for more years than I would like to admit, 15. Anyway, Holy Priest, if you need a PvP partner, please let me know. My husband might object. He's my pocket hunter. But as a girl gamer, I've known the vitriolness of the internet because of Gamergate. We've seen what happens when trolls are allowed to attack in force. And so you put those two things together, and with anonymity in some cases, and you get this massive storm. And as a marketer, I know that before 2016, if you were targeting on Facebook for ads, you could target down to minuscule details. It was awesome. You could say, give me the person that went to the University of Georgia football game last week to target for this week's Facebook Live about that game. We can't do that anymore. They've changed that. We don't have it where a company can take out an ad. Before, you could take out an ad and nobody besides the people you targeted and you and Facebook knew who saw that ad and what that ad was. Now, if you go to a page, their promotions are there. There's actually a tab you can click on to see what they're doing. Pages now get rated on their quality. How much fake news are you putting out there? So they're putting out these quality checks. I don't know if you know this, but Facebook across the globe has gotten with fact checkers to look at what's being posted, which is both awesome and what about free speech?
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword, and that's what social media really is. It's a double-edged sword. It is the most beautiful, brilliant thing ever. Like right now, I know what my godchild is doing in Florida with a hurricane coming, whether her parents are crazy or not and stay, we don't know. But we know if we should panic because of Facebook. I knew my nephew was born because of Facebook, because they didn't have time to call people. But on the other hand, I've been ripped to shreds on Facebook for saying something that maybe wasn't the most appropriate comment for the group I was in. So it is this double-edged sword. And how do we handle that? And as a people, we have to choose to educate ourselves. And sadly, not everybody does. Though I am astounded and thrilled that this room is packed at 10 a.m. on a Friday at Dragon Con. And most of you look pretty good. I mean, it is day two. I remember when this was day one and, yeah, you know, back in the old days. And
when there were 12 of us.
When there were 12. And there would. I was expecting 12 people this morning. I'm glad I put on makeup, so thank you. And I'm just saying, y'all might be on Facebook later because I took a picture, but so I'll black you out if you need me to. But I think that's what we're at. We're at this place where it's this beautiful thing, but it's this horrible thing as well. And marketing has a tremendous impact on that. And I think really, from marketing's point of view, 2008, that presidential election, is where we really started to see what we can do in digital media to bring people to the polls.
I differ a little bit with respect to the beauty of it.
I'm an optimist. I'm just going to tell you that now. I'm like the Tinkerbell, so.
Yeah. See, I like to think that I'm neither, you know, a pessimist. I don't see a glass half full or half empty. I just see a glass that needs to be washed, you know.
the dishwasher in my family. I completely appreciate that.
So the problem I have with social media is, you know, everybody in this room is intelligent and well-informed. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. The problem is that in 2018, Pew Research Center did a study that showed that about 70% of the American population gets at least some of its news from Facebook. And I find that just horrifying. You know, to me, the solution is obvious. Okay, you turn off social media, you read a magazine, you read a newspaper, whatever, you get rid of all the clutter. Well, that's great for, you know, the 20 or 30% who actually read anymore, but it doesn't work in the real world. So what do you do? You know, in 2016, the Trump campaign, they identified 13.5 million persuadable voters in 16 states. And they used 100,000 different variants of micro-targeting to get down to a block-by-block basis of who they could persuade. Because all they knew, all they had to do was persuade a certain percentage of people in those states, and you sway the entire election. Well, we're now living in a world in which social media has contributed to, let's just say politely, the chaos that we're living in right now. And something has to be done about that. I mean, the media regulates radio. It regulates television. I mean, we all remember years ago, Janet Jackson exposed a nipple for a few seconds, if that, and people lost their minds. Yep. You know, the problems that we're having now, I would say, are a little bit more serious than breast exposure, yeah, you know, at a halftime game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have to take this serious, and we have to get policymakers to take it serious, because what's happening is our entire system of government is being undermined, and we are going to lose that. And I guess the big takeaway I always have is people tend to think that democracy is inevitable. Oh, we've lived with this forever. It's always going to be this way. No, it is absolutely not. And the example I always give for that is I always ask people, how long do you think democracy lasted in ancient Athens? And most people tend to say, oh, a few hundred years. No, it was about 75 or 80 years. It's a very difficult thing to sustain. And if we don't get busy, and if we, the people who are informed, if we don't spread the message and get others to be informed, we are going to lose out, and we will be, you can just kiss democracy goodbye, one little step at a time. That's the inherent danger, and that's why I don't see the beauty in it. Yes, it could have an important effect on society, and by that I mean a positive effect, but that's outweighed by the danger that it presents to us now.
See, and I think it's also a place where we can combat that. So I'm part of a huge group that is mostly women, to be honest with you, that talks about what challenges we face in society. And without social media, it's like 100,000 of us would not be able to be having that conversation. Mm-hmm. So it also gives us a rallying point mm-hmm. for democracy, mm-hmm. you know, as well. But I think the other thing we're fighting against is intellectualism being seen as a negative. You know, being smart right. and being educated, not being seen as a positive,
right.
is a problem we have.
That's a major danger.
And I think that's historically been the case throughout our entire history. You know, intellectuals tend to be lumped as, oh, the eggheads. You don't want to listen to that person. That's not someone you want to have a beer with, you know, to go back to an earlier campaign that will be nameless at the moment.
That's right.
So I want to open up to audience questions as quickly as possible, because I know, like, this room is full, guys. It's like real full. But to start with just a few level setting questions, and these are for the panel too, and I will raise my hand as well. How many of you are on some form of social media, not just Facebook? How many of you follow a decent number of people on social media who you would say you strongly disagree with on a regular basis? How many of you have received some form of your news on social media? How many of you have clicked on an ad from social media? How many of you have actually bought something? Okay, so if you haven't looked and seen, almost the whole room started with their hands up. And then when we got to the end, I think there was about 10 people. And from the beginning to the end, I think there was a drop every single question I asked. So that's a really interesting, you can see the progression there. Audience questions for the panel.
Oh, by the way, they're recording the questions, so the guy with the orange fuzzy mic there, have him throw that to you. Yeah, it's just throwable. throw it to you so that we get it on tape.
Yes, you mentioned the Janet Jackson thing, and the reaction was in part because the government has rules about how things go on TV. And so you say there's a problem on social media, and the government currently regulates TV and radio, so that leads to the obvious question, what then should the government do to regulate the internet? That seems to be what you were kind of pointing toward, but we need ideas about what is and is not appropriate. Do you have something to suggest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really difficult thing because anyone can say anything at any time. You know, my grandmother could, you know, get on something and broadcast to the entire world. So how do you combat that? You know, Facebook was just fined $5 billion as a result of the privacy breach issue, which sounds like it's really momentous, but that's a month of its revenue. You know, literally 1 month. They're bringing in $15 billion per quarter. So Mark Zuckerberg will act all contrite and, oh yes, we'll try to do better. And as Amy mentioned, they were fined for doing the same thing in 2011. Well, to me, the first step is you gotta have meaningful fines. You've got to make these massive, massive companies that can sway elections in countries all over the globe sit up and go, oh, they're serious. They're not just going to take away, you know, a tiny little bit. The funny thing, and it's pathetic, but it's funny, after the $5 billion FTC fine was announced, Facebook's stock went up. Because
it was only $5 billion.
Yeah, exactly. The investor went, yeah, that's not so bad. You know, we can live with that. Well, if it was $50 billion, stockholders are upset. Zuckerberg goes, ooh, yeah, we got to do something about this. So that's, I think, step one. You got to be serious. It's got to be something meaningful to make these companies realize, no, we can't do that. Google was fined, you know, for YouTube violations and for Street View. For a period of years, you know, their Street View cars were going around. Well, they were actually siphoning off data from all of the places where they went. And so they were fine. And it, like for Google, it was $13 million. I mean, that's literally like me digging in and pulling out a dime and going, here you go. You know,
not to mention that actually wasn't against the law until they changed it.
Right.
And it was based on one judge's ruling over 50 years of case law, and they threw it out with one judge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a little presentation on that one.
So I mean, I think you also have to have more transparency. You know, there's got to be disclosure. Right now, dark money goes into Facebook. You don't know who's buying it. You don't know, you know, what it's been used for. And Brexit was caused basically by that. So the fining, the transparency, there has to be a lot more knowledge. They have to come clean and can't just say, no, this is our data. It's proprietary to us. You can't use it. I think there has to be full disclosure and transparency.
A couple of things I want to add, because you talked about broadcast and regulation. And so broadcast television, the reason that the government regulates it is because it is freely floating in the air, and when you turn on your TV or radio, it is there. And that allowed the government to regulate it in a way that they don't regulate things like cable television. The inherent qualities were different, and so you subscribe to cable television. You have to choose to it. You said broadcast on the internet. That is kind of what we think we're doing. But a lot of content on the internet, you have to choose to access it in a way. So it's not the same as what we would consider broadcast television or radio. It is regulated differently. The whole system setup is different. And so just to define a little bit about the way the government comes at this in terms of regulation, I also want to level set a little bit on speech, because the word speech has been brought up several times. The First Amendment in the United States, which doesn't exist in other countries, and this is an international conversation, but in the US, the First Amendment protects against government regulation of speech, not private sector limitations on speech. And so when we talk about social media, I want to, like, we're not talking about necessarily a First Amendment issue, unless we're talking about government regulating social media, and then we get into potentially hugely unconstitutional issues. We're talking about instead, there are some statutes that are relevant. Many of you may have heard of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act that has been in the news a lot lately. We can talk about that a little bit more, but to put those into two very separate buckets, government regulation, company restrictions, different things.
Yeah, there's also a rather interesting problem in that all the social media companies come under what's called the Carrier Act, meaning they're they're not liable for the things that are posted by the people who use their service. In order to do that, they have to pass all the information equally. The minute they start censoring the data, they're no longer a carrier. And therefore, they're like a newspaper, and they're a publisher, and they're required to be responsible for it. Or that's the theory, anyway. So
the 230 actually allows and promotes platforms to regulate content. They want you to do it. So you get the 230
and
protections
still,
whether you limit content or not.
Oh, okay. I was
because they
wrong
want,
on that.
It's actually a really, really common misconception. I can tell you more than two hands full of people who have been really trying to get that misconception done away with, but they can only write so much, and when other people are writing, a lie gets around the world faster than the truth can get its shoes on.
Yeah, we can fix that, though. We have social media weapons. We can fix that misconception. Yeah.
They're working on it, but that is a misconception. I want to clear. All of you in the room can now go out and look that up and share that that's a thing.
Yeah, afterwards, I want to ask you to get some details on that. So, yeah, there's the issue. And the other thing is, it's not possible to have a person look at every single post. So you have to use AI to do it, and AI is imperfect. Not to mention AI, based on the training model, can be biased. It can be biased in very, very subtle ways. There's a whole section of arguments about bias and use of bias in AIs in the court system for sentencing. So it's a very, very difficult thing. The technology is moving so fast, and the impact on society is moving so fast. We really haven't come to grips with it yet. Like Dwayne said, it's impacting our society right now in a very, very big way. In some cases, it's really good. You find out about your, you said your godson?
Yeah, my godson.
Yeah, your godson. That's really, really awesome. But at the same time, if it's getting you to do something that you, if you really thought about it, you wouldn't normally have done, that's not a good thing. So we really don't have a solution for this problem. We're going to need a lot of thinking on this. That's why y'all are here. You have to think about this, go back, disseminate that information.
Well, I'm going to actually refer to the advertising world. Advertisers are known for self-regulation because they don't want the government regulating them, particularly when it comes to alcohol. So for years, there's regulations on kind of in their own group of how they would advertise. And I think as a collective, we have to kind of demand of social media outlets to start that process themselves. And we see some of that. But I don't think government can keep up in terms of regulation because the technology just changes. It's sort of like how that bill, people think it means one thing. Well, as soon as technology changes, it alters it. It alters what's going on.
This morning, I was scrolling Facebook, and I read an article that the Washington Post published like 3 years ago saying that the Chinese government is posted or paid people to post like 450 million comments, fake comments on social media. What are they trying to accomplish with the 450 million posts per year on social media? What can we do to help stop that?
Wow, that's an interesting issue because our laws, any laws we pass here, have no effect on China. And that's also an issue because any laws we pass here that potentially do affect China, you're projecting our policies and our ideals across a border that's usually considered an act of war. So we have to be very careful what we push and how we push it. In Hong Kong, if you've been following the events in Hong Kong, that was one of the things that came up I was going to put on here on this list of events. There was this massive surge of social media attacks to paint a bad picture of the people who were protesting in Hong Kong so that they can, it's surmised, so that they can sell the idea that if the government goes in and uses force of arms to stop this insurrection, as they're calling it, then they're good guys in the eyes of the people. So they're using social media to paint the picture that these people are evil and deserve us to come stamp them out. So it's a really interesting thing. It's interesting in that I'm not in the middle of it. I'm standing over here. But if you are in the middle of it, we have loved ones in the middle of it, it's not funny. So I wish I had an answer to that question. I don't know of a solution to the problem.
What what they're, you asked what they're trying to do. Social media, like, if you get a lot of comments on your post, more people will see your post. If you share a lot of comments, like, a lot of social media is set up so engagement with something promotes it to other people. So you have a bigger chance of people seeing it. Now, that is one of the reasons why, in the wake of figuring that out, a lot of platforms are changing the way they do things to try to track some of that artificial traffic and not promote those posts. It has been a hard problem, but I think some of the, in the wake of recognizing when social media gets it right, because we shouldn't just hate bash, I think they're working on that really actively and trying to do better. They're not necessarily always doing better, but they're trying.
Yeah, one of the, I don't remember which one it was, might have been YouTube, took down 200 channels in the wake of what you're talking about. Yeah. So they are trying to do things. The problem is they also took down, I forget what it was. It was rather benign. But in the wake of some event they were taking down, they took down a whole bunch of content that was considered educational and valid. And so the AIs aren't exactly very tight. And so it can cause as much damage as good when they try to exercise automated ways of dealing with this.
So I'm going to recommend we take 3 questions from all of you, because we have 20-something minutes left. So I'm not cutting you off, but I want to get as many of you in as possible. So we'll take 3 questions and then we'll respond.
I was recently put in Facebook timeout for 3 days for inappropriate content. And all I did was like a reply that was an anti-white supremacist reply. And how does that happen? I could not post, I could not like, I could not do anything. And it was something that was anti-white supremacy. What is your thoughts on that?
Mine is stop using Facebook. Yeah. I did in 2016.
Oh, you want to go ahead and ask?
No.
Okay. So a lot of the tech companies themselves are really racing to try and keep up with some of the different problems that we're talking about here. YouTube's a great example. If you have 1,000 hours of video being uploaded every hour, how are you going to keep up with all the deluge of what all is going on? I do agree that a regulatory solution is something that we definitely need to consider, but a lot of our representatives have a smartphone on their assistant, and what would you think is the best way for us to help push for change at the regulatory level, either through direct teaching or supporting some sort of model legislation or stuff like that?
And one more.
I work for a tech company, so I won't say which one. So all this is interesting. But one of the things that's happening in the tech industry, particularly if it's a global company, is what the EU passes GDPR for the protection of their citizens. And the gentleman mentioned about the fines have to really be astronomical. And that regulatory is 10% of their GDP. If that was implemented wherever, I think that would be a great factor. Because in that regulatory appliance, or what appliance, I'm thinking about my job. In that regulation, they wouldn't be able to send any of your private data. They would have to. The companies have to protect your data. Without your permission, they would get fined. They also have to mask your data. So if you were to share it with another company, they have to tell you that they've shared your data. And if they don't, they get fined. So that's one of the things I'd like, more people need to look at some of the things that have already been implemented and fight for getting that implemented here. So
we have Facebook timeout, volume of posts and who regulates, or if regulation, and GDPR and privacy regulations. We'll start with Dwayne, and we'll head this way.
Okay, I'll just do a quick speed round. The Facebook timeout, you got hit by the no shoot, no shoes, no shirt, no service kind of thing is what happens. Since it's a private thing, they don't have to, you know, provide speech. And like Keith was saying, the AI is imperfect, you know, because you got swept up along with the white supremacist stuff that's just kind of an assumption made by the AI and lumped you into the same thing. How to push for changes with respect to representatives having smartphones. My personal view on this is that the people who are benefiting from the system are not about to change the system. You know, they would much rather be in Washington, D.C. and schmoozed by lobbyists than go back to, you know, Idaho or Montana and run a pest control company or something. My personal view is until we solve the gerrymandering problem and actually get people to speak to everyone instead of, you know, to the... Until we solve that problem, you're going to have people cater to their base, because why wouldn't they, you know? And so we've got to solve that problem first. And if we do, then we get reasonable people, then we can start effectuating change. With respect to GDPR, I totally agree. We've seen a lot of the impact of GDPR. A lot of companies have implemented privacy policies to do that because trade is international. But we have not seen the type of fine mechanism that you're talking about. And I agree, if something like that, that's exactly what I was saying to the gentleman earlier, that would make companies sit up and take notice. So.
And I agree with GDPR. I mean, I have friends that work at media companies, and even though they didn't have to implement it here in the United States, they did, because they were a global company. And so it makes sense. It is a little bulky if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a single proprietor. It's a pain in your backside, to be honest with you. It's definitely meant for global corporations. It may need some handling for entrepreneurs, because it really is unwieldy there. But yeah. I think in general, the idea is absolutely correct. Facebook timeout, my favorite thing. I've not been in Facebook timeout yet. I'm waiting. The problem is the AI saw white supremacists and didn't see anti. So the best thing you can do for the next person is make sure you put in a ticket saying, I didn't do anything. Okay? So say, hey, this is my counteract. Because if you don't, then that AI is not going to learn. The other thing you should know is the feed for you on Facebook is different for every single person in this room. We all have our own formulas. So it really can box you in so you don't see everything. And that to me is one of the greatest things you can do to try to have a better worldview is go off of your feed, go to real news sites and look at them. I don't remember the middle one at all. Oh, government. I agree. I think once we can get rid of gerrymandering and lobbying, then we can start having a conversation that's not driven by people who have more money than I do, and you do. Well, if you do have more money, please go lobby. Because I'm going to assume that you're good and you're back with us, so go and use that wisely. But otherwise, I think we have to take care of those two things first. I absolutely agree.
Okay, first off, I want to preface this by the fact that I'm a hacker. That means I think in terms of, hey, what can I get this to do that the designer didn't intend? If they didn't think of every possible case and corner case, then there's something I can game this with to try to get things to go, you know, the right way, which is the way I think.
Keith, I'm going to give you my card later because you're going to need it.
Are you scared? I'm kind of scared that we're in the middle.
Actually, I could use a good lawyer. When you were asking all the questions about who had... social media. You notice I never raised my hand? What's it tell you that the one guy who's a spook professionally in the room doesn't have social media? Do you know why? Because I actually know and recognize that it is the greatest intelligence tool ever built by man. Where I used to have to go to sea and spend 280 plus days a year north of the Arctic Circle watching those pesky Canadians. Oh, hi. Oh, I recognize you. Yeah. You notice it worked out okay. We don't speak Russian or glow in the dark. So.
You don't glow in the dark.
Yeah. Well, no, actually on submarines, nuclear submarines, you get far less radiation than you all get because you go out in the sun. So. Just little tidbit. Anyway, where was I going with that? The point is, social media is an absolutely amazing way for us to communicate. But the way it's built, it can be gamed so easily. But that can be a good thing if you're trying to rally people behind something that's really, really important, like GDPR rules. that would be a really good thing. It's a really, really bad thing if you're manipulating edge case voters to turn districts to push an election in your direction. That, I think, is a misuse of it. Go watch The Great Hack. You're going to unplug your computer and hide under the bed with it. Now, as to the AI, that was one of the cases where it went through and said, anything that has to do with white supremacy. Well, they took down every educational site that was talking about the history of the fight against white supremacy. It was taken down in that same sweep. It was a huge mess. And so that every time they turn out one of these weapons, it has one of these unanticipated side effects. Now, they can go in and fix that, but it doesn't happen overnight. Think of the trillions of posts that get posted up there, and these tools are automatic, and there's an army of people. And by the way, those army of people, they know how to game the system too, and they have things they think ought to be right, and that influences things as well. And it doesn't mean that the company's made a policy to say you must do it this way, but if you tend to hire toward a particular demographic, then that demographic is going to exercise their beliefs. And if you have a majority of people with a particular belief system, doesn't matter whether it's pro or against what you think, they're going to act as individuals in a particular direction. No single snowflake blames themselves for the avalanche. I didn't invent that. Somebody else invented that quote. So that's the problem with the AI. And you did get people banned. You have to go back and you have to fight it. You have to do this as individuals. There's no automated big thing overhead that we can push a button and make it happen. Unfortunately, that just doesn't exist yet. Maybe someday the AI will have a singularity and everything will be taken care of because it'll be Armageddon. So now, politicians. Do you know the event that happened that Rene D'Arresta talked about where the anti-vaxxers used social media almost worked? So here you have this tool in your hands. You can use social media. You can actually get enough of an uproar. The politicians will listen to that. But so can the people who are against whatever you believe. So it's a double-edged sword. Who said that to start with? I think it was Dwayne said that. It was double-edged. Oh, it was you who said
I'll
it.
I'll take it. It sounds lovely.
Tyra said that. Okay. that it's a double-edged sword. Data regulation. As someone who's had, I like the GDPR. When they said, we're going to do the GDPR, I looked at it and went, yes, finally, they're going to make this is my data, and I want you to protect it. Thank you, Equifax. And that made me really steaming mad. Oh, that wasn't the one that was really bad. The OPM breach is the one that really ticked me off. That was my data. Oh, and by the way, the data they exposed, when you fill out for security clearance, it's a colonoscopy of your personal life and everybody you've ever come in contact with, including all your family and friends and everything else. So that's the kind of information is breached. I'm really mad at them for that. Anyway, data regulation. On the flip side, I've actually had to implement practices for GDPR. How they define those rules, they sound great on the surface, but they're warm and fuzzy on the surface. They didn't get into the weeds of the details. For instance, your IP address is personal information. That's you, even though the law says it's not you. Kind of bit of this, right? So that web log that your IP address visited my website is under GDPR.
So I'm going to take a quick...
How many have a web page? Congratulations, you own GDPR data.
We're going to take three more questions, and then I'm going to go through and do answers and closing remarks because of how much time this is taking. I do want to take a really quick 45-second go-around. Pay attention. Some platforms do power dynamics when they're considering what speech comes up and comes down, and some don't. Some do an equal application. If you say you hate white men and you say you hate black women, that's treated the exact same. They don't take power differentials into account, and that's important. GDPR, there are groups like Access Now, my former employer, working really hard to get a privacy law in the US. Call your representative. I lived in DC, I didn't have one. If you don't live in DC and you have a representative, call them and tell them you support a privacy law in the US. People are working really hard on this right now. And a real quick poll. How many people implicitly trust government to regulate what you can say on the internet? How many people implicitly trust companies to regulate what you can say on the internet? Next time you think about regulating speech on the internet, I want you to understand that, like, we had half a hand raised on the first question and no hands on the second question. It's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Three questions.
Okay, hi. This is a great panel. I wanted to say, you know, we were at lunch yesterday, and we were having this conversation about, like, the people who would, they love the Second Amendment so much that they would actually accept, like, a Nazi state to make sure they had their guns. You know what I mean? Like, they would be okay with a government like that in order to keep their Second Amendment cemented. And these kind of messages, you know, extreme messaging, as a marketer myself, goes out online, right? This extreme messaging, and pushes agendas that really are uncomfortable for a lot of me and my friends and, you know, people who out there who are intellectuals who don't want to go in those extreme cases, right? We want freedom for everybody. Is the answer, and I'm asking this as a marketer myself, is it to just shut it down like the spook and just say, forget it, no social media, we're not going to do it because it's not worth losing the democracy? Or is the case that we don't have the same campaign running? We're not pushing as hard as Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers. We're not active in our marketing efforts to reverse that tide of messaging. What do you think about that?
I was wondering what you thought about in other countries where they limit the period of campaigning before an election, and if you thought that implementing a similar law here might cut down on some of the political misinformation and those campaigns just by limiting the time frame in which that information can be spread.
What are your thoughts on requiring people when they sign up for social media to actually have identifying information that can track back to you, like it used to do for Facebook when it first started? You had to have an EDU address to sign up.
All right. Keith, do you want to start? We're doing responses and closing remarks. If we do have time for questions, I'll take a couple more, but we have 8 minutes left.
Okay. Directly to your thing there. How many have ever seen anything that they agreed with on social media? How many have seen something they disagreed with on social media? So that means everybody in here has seen something they like and something they don't like. Well, because you saw something you don't like that I do like, I want the government to regulate that. Now, you mentioned a spook saying no social media. That's a personal decision on my part. I think it's wrong to have the government force that decision on your part. That's up to you to decide. That's not up to the government to tell you what to do. Free speech means free speech. I paid a price for that free speech, and I expect to get my free speech. Okay, limiting time frame for political campaigns. We kind of have that now in that you can't campaign within so many feet of a polling place, which is kind of a joke, because last I checked, radio waves and internet goes pretty much everywhere. So. Yeah, there might be something to be said for that. I haven't really thought about that. There might be unseen ramifications I hadn't thought of. The one thing I can tell you is this. If you want to do something about the problem, you're going to have to do some work. There's no free lunch here. You have to own the problem yourself. Like, you're the only person working on it. Now, you're not the only person working on it, because you might convince he might convince him to help him. So. That's the idea. We have to do this ourselves. We have to start now. Don't be the target. Be the person that the last person on the planet they want to target. Don't be that person.
Do you want to?
Okay. I'm going to start here because I think that in terms of marketing, this is just one of the things it does, and it goes back to the question you asked about what are they trying to do. It's breed discord, but it also, social media allows people who have unpopular opinions to be very vocal and suddenly be very popular. It's like the schoolyard bully all of a sudden got more bullies, and now they've banded together.
Yes.
And what he said is absolutely true. The only way we, as a community, and I'm hoping all of us in here don't want to live in a fascist community, is to stand up and say, you say no. We have to stand up. We have to be vocal. And sometimes that's hard because, you know, it's like if you're not a patriot, if you don't support X, you know, when you hear those kind of comments, well, you have to be brave enough to say, yes, I'm a patriot, and I don't support X. And without that, it doesn't happen. It's, if the minority gets such a big voice, the majority has to come back and stand up even louder and say, no, that's not the opinion of this country as a whole. And I think that's the only way we win. And I think as marketers, we know that. But what it's done, social media has done, is given voice to and a way for that group to form together so that they can communicate and seem very loud and very much like the schoolyard bully. I got so caught up in marketing, I can't remember anything else. So somebody give me a clue what else was asked. I absolutely positively agree, and I'll tell you why. Jaws. Jaws was the first movie that was ever marketed before a couple of weeks it came out. Before it came out, it was actually pre-marketed for several months. Now we get movies that are marketed for several years. And we can see that over several years, we start to build this anticipation, right? We start to get emotionally connected. And I think we see that with political candidates. So I absolutely positively agree with a limited time for marketing because it prevents a little bit of that instead of multiple years of what's going in there. And I also believe in campaign a certain amount of dollars too. So, I get everything? I think
the last one was requiring Facebook or others to provide actual information.
Well, I think they're trying to do that with their combination. With working with fake news sources throughout the world to try to get things flagged as fake news. So
for me, with respect to the whole free speech issue, which is implicit in your question, free speech is not unlimited. The Supreme Court ruled long ago that you don't have the right to stand up in a movie theater and falsely yell fire. Well, things are burning, you know? I'm sorry, they just are. Things are burning. And the falsity has to be addressed, and also the preeminent danger has to be addressed. And where you have both of those, you have the ability to come in and regulate that speech. And so when you have people saying that, oh yeah, you know, Nazi government is all fine and good and so forth, if that presents a preeminent danger, then the government is authorized to do something about it. Now, what exactly is to be done there is the much harder question, but I don't think it's as easy as saying, oh, this is free speech, everyone can say anything that you want. You can't. You know, there are limits. And I think the government needs to explore those limits from a regulatory fashion. With respect to limits on campaigning, I totally agree with respect to the dollar amounts and the time frame. However, England has that, and it didn't help them with Brexit. Huge amount of dark money was poured in at the last, unknown, violating their election laws. Carol Cadwaller with The Observer did a great TED talk on this issue. I encourage all of you because it highlights the dangers in a very real sense of what social media means and what it meant to England, that they're now living in this post-Brexit world that was swayed by dark money. So yes, I think it would be a good idea. Whether that will help, I don't know, because then you can just pour the money in if it's not limited. And then, but on the upside, then maybe I wouldn't see, you know, Ted Cruz political ads in Texas, which would be a good thing for me. And with respect to social media requiring information, that gets to the very first question. I think transparency is a good thing. So I think having, you know, real people with real addresses and so forth, if you are advertising, if you are setting up a site, whatever, having genuine information so that you can be held accountable is a good thing for all of us.
So we're at our last 2 minutes. Remember, this is not only a white, Anglo, wealthy country conversation. This is a global conversation.
Yeah.
Remember that for some people, anonymity and pseudonymity on the internet is a matter of life or death and vital when you're talking about some of these issues, and that we might want to preserve that. Remember that nobody agrees on who should regulate the internet. And remember to rate this panel in the DragonCon app and leave comments. Thank you that nobody in this room asked a question about voting on the blockchain. I appreciate that. Thank all of you for coming with us this morning. Have a great Friday.
Friday.
You were awesome.
Yeah, you were awesome. And thank you all for coming. This is the best Harry Potter / fiction panel I've ever been on.